Your cousin is to be late to work.
Me? Wasn't me.
So you're blaming me?
Yes. But, you know, that's what I'm here for.
Yes.
I can't
quite take
that.
Ready?
Yes. Good evening. Today is August the 7th. It is 5:38. This is a Policy Instruction Personnel Student Services Committee meeting. Tony, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Lozanz?
Here.
Mrs. Casas?
Here.
Mr. Coronado?
And I believe he's going to be here. First agenda item, please.
Item 2A is 2012-13 Student Code of Conduct. Ms. Fierro.
Good evening, Ms. Fierro.
Good evening. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and explain the Student Code of Conduct. And the one that, really the only one that we need to look at and talk about is, I believe it's a white copy. You don't have a white copy? The one that was green. That one was really just our working document. So, and let me just kind of explain that one. The one that was, okay, sorry.
Start over.
Okay, we have
board white. Board members, board members, and
yes, sir. Okay.
Okay, so the green copy that you have was our working document, and you had some parts in there that were shaded blue that it looked like we had to make a selection. And actually, the selections that were made are highlighted in yellow on the white copy, and those were actually board approved last year. So those aren't anything new. What you're going to see new is the revisions are going to be a red line, which removed, and these were based on TASI's recommendation on the white copy. And then what was added is in blue.
So board, basically the green copy you have already dealt with and approved.
That's our working copy.
It's the white copy now that has the new items.
Many of the changes came in the glossary as well to define some of the vocabulary. And most of the language was just clarified.
And Pam, what you're saying is the blue language is the new language from the state?
Yes.
And in the white copy, the yellow language is what?
The yellow language was from the choices that were highlighted.
The board has already approved.
The board approved those. Now, there was one, if you look on page 15, there was one choice that we made based on TASI's recommendation. And that's going to be on page 15 at the top where it says the former language was engages in conduct relating to a false alarm or report, including a bomb threat or a terroristic threat involving a public school. See glossary. Those same words are on page 24. One is dealing with DAP, the other one is dealing with expulsion. One is dealing with mandatory DAP, the other one with mandatory expulsion. And what TASI recommended was that we separate false alarm report and bomb threat or terroristic threat. So we delineated a false alarm or report would be mandatory DAP, which is, for example, a fire alarm, which is actually a felony. And then leaving that as mandatory DAP and putting terroristic threats involving or including a bomb threat to mandatory expulsion. So that's the only change really that we made from your decision last year.
Don't be bringing your spirits.
So that's something you want to look at and consider. There are some things that have double asterisks.
Yeah, I'll go over those.
Okay.
I have a question.
Okay.
It's on page 10.
And it is different than on page 9 of the green TASB model code of conduct. And I know that I wasn't supposed to refer to that, but...
Okay, what is that?
Discipline management techniques.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's the first paragraph. It says, where it says, in the whole paragraph itself.
It's different from which one?
The one from, I don't know if I saw it before. I don't know.
It's slightly off on page numbers because of the red line and blue line and the notes that are on the side of the other line.
Okay.
Board President, committee chair person, may I go over a couple things? Thank you, ma'am. All right, so on the white document, the blue is added by the state. So it's kind of mandatory. And the yellow are the items that you agreed on last year. And so technically what we would be approving as we go through the readings on this is the blue, which is the things that have come from the state, because you have already approved the yellow. Of course, you can go back as we approve, and if any of the yellow items that you approved last year are somewhat different now, you can change that. But I wanted to bring your attention to three items that as superintendent, I have a bit of a concern with, and maybe in the end we don't change them at all, but I want to just bring them to your attention. And that is, first one is on page 7 at the bottom in the white. I don't know if the bottom comment on page 7 reflects the reality of the day in and day out of our schools. Because currently what is approved, it says students shall not display, turn on, or use a telecommunications device, including a cellular telephone or other electronic device on school property during the school day. And it gives no leeway to a high school or middle school or whoever to have any, for a student to use like the calculator on their cell phone or to download an app that a teacher would want all the kids to use on their phones, or a student to be able to utilize the phone in any way. And my question is, your superintendent is simply, do we want to modify it and bring back language? And we wouldn't need to do it tonight. We could direct administration to bring back language that would be a little bit more pliable for schools, or do we want to stay that strict? That's my question, Madam Chair.
How do you feel,
I'd like to see him bring it back with a little bit more flexibility, I think. I mean,
that's the practice on campus is.
I know they let him turn it on during lunch after school, and I know they let him use it sometimes in class. Yeah. So to me, that seems more feasible. That's how I feel.
Ms. Searles.
No, I think they should all turn them in at the door.
Well, you can have mine.
You know, what Dr. Murphy said, what I'm hearing is that, you know, to use it as a calculator or something, we buy these kids so many electronic devices that I don't know how they could be in want for anything much more. I mean, they all have calculators, they have God only knows what all we bought, pad, tablet, pamphlet, whatever they get. I'm okay with it like it is, but I can agree with Monica that maybe it's not very realistic.
And I think that's where it is. It's in the realistic nature of it.
I mean, if I might, Madam Chair, I know like for SAT and SAT purposes, I know when you get there, you have to either leave your phone in the car or you have to turn it in. You're not allowed to take it with you. So like for big testing and stuff like that, we can take them up or not have them at all. But I mean, in the classroom even, there's all kinds of different apps that they can use in the class and use for homework or use to help them with formulas and whatnot. So I don't know if it's, we want to necessarily go, I think it should be up to the classroom teacher as well.
And our policy does talk about instructional use. The student shall obtain prior approval before using personal telecommunications or other personal electronic devices for on-campus instructional purposes. So we do have that in our policy.
But it conflicts with what's in the code of conduct. So all we would ask is that you would allow administration to bring back language that will try to sort some of that out.
I mean, and as it, I think as we have it now, if they're being inappropriate, it does get picked up and they have to pay a fee to get it back. So it's...
Well, and that's the thing, that language does allow for that.
Okay.
The language that is in there just allows for...
Okay.
Confiscation.
So what is it that you're planning to...
We're asking direction from the board to take this back, and we will work on it and bring you language based on our conversation that will flex it up a little bit and allow for more instructional use.
You're talking about the student code of conduct?
Page 7,
right.
Bottom bullet.
Right, okay. I have
all right. The next one that I'd like to bring up, and it's basically the same. It's on page 19 and 29. This is just a personal thing with me, and we talked about this a year ago, and I figured, what the heck, I'd try one more time. The bottom paragraph on 19 says, newly enrolled students. The district shall continue the DAEP placement of a student who enrolls in the district and was assigned to a DAEP in an open enrollment charter school or another district. And I totally agree that we should continue the DAEP placement, and on page 29 it says the same thing about expulsion. And we can interpret this that will allow flexibility to the principal, but I don't want to get into situations, I can foresee individual situations where a student was at a district, and a perfect example of this is Houston ISD. When a student gets placed in Houston ISD, they're placed in it for one calendar year. They're there for an entire year. Well, if the child moves from Houston to Canyatillo, I don't know if we want them in DAEP for a calendar year. I don't even know if we're set up to do it like that, like HISD is. And what practice is that a student who comes in, the principal can either keep the same DAEP placement, make them stay there the year, or at least have some flexibility to say that it could be modified at the principal's discretion.
Legal policy does allow you to continue the placement or, for example, if they're expulsion, to put them in DAP or to put them in regular classes. So legal policy does allow for that flexibility.
So I want the code of conduct to also say that. The problem is, though, is that I don't want at all to create a situation where people want to escape to Canyatillo.
That's exactly. That's it. Right.
And so maybe we keep,
yes.
And this is where we landed last time. So maybe we keep the stronger language here, but we do have a legal policy that allows for flexibility.
Well,
the legal does allow, but the code of conduct does not. And that's where I'm saying, you know, it's just different.
So are you saying that we're going to pick and choose what we want then?
Not based on the code of conduct, but if it came down to it, the legal policy does allow for.
So that what you're saying, if a student, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, could I speak?
Yes.
If a student came from your Houston ISD, they've got their year, and there's a reason I'm sure they put that kid there for a year.
They put, that's the problem. They put everyone.
There's probably a good reason. they're in there for a year, and their parents are looking around and go, oh, we can move to Canyatillo. You can get out over there. And they all move here. This is, we've seen it time and again.
And this won't allow that to happen. But...
But under our legal policy, the principal could say, listen, you know, the kid's been there 2 months, and that person, the principal, could then come to the board, come to you, and ask for relief.
Yes.
And that is covered in the legal policy.
But it's not public.
It shouldn't be.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Well, that was what my question was.
It's happened in the past, right?
Yeah.
One of my buddies.
We should leave it the way it is.
And the legal policy is telling what we as a district can do. And from there, we made a decision to do this, but there is that
Yes, they're all coming down. There is an appeal process.
And we could add a...
All right, so we will leave the code of conduct alone regarding that. The only thing...
Hold on, Rach.
Well, like an expulsion. Isn't it, if you're expelled, the whatever school district that you're working with, they do not have to accept you, depending on the severity of what they did, correct?
Depending on their policy.
I don't know about acceptance. I know that they have to honor the expulsion. They do have to, they have to continue to keep the student expelled.
Expelled.
Well, right here.
Everyone gets to go to school somewhere, but if they move in and they're expelled at a previous district.
But a lot of them do move around thinking that they move around that they can, that we're supposed to take them in. No,
well, right here, if you look at, I give you FOD legal. And if you look where it says expelled from another district, if a student has been expelled from another school district, the expelling school, expelling district shall provide to the district in which the student enrolls a copy of the expulsion order and a referral to the authorized officer of the juvenile court. The district in which the student enrolls may continue the expulsion under the terms of the order, may place the student in DAAP for the period specified by the expulsion order, or may allow the student to attend regular classes without completing the period of expulsion. So the district does not have to honor, and an accepting district does not have to honor the expulsion. But our
policy
says...
But we're not saying that in the code of conduct.
But, yeah. And we don't have, this is legal, we don't have a local, but our student code of conduct, which once you approve it becomes our policy, says that we honor it. So come to your ISDs, we're stating we will honor it.
Well, but we can change it in local.
We actually, through the board, can change it in legal,
right,
too.
And we can change it, no, not legal, not we legal. Can change it in local.
We can change it in local, but our student code of conduct should, they should mesh with our
Policy. We cannot touch legal, but we can change it in local.
And then we'll need to change it now.
What I mean is we can act from the legal.
We can make a choice. We can say we're based on legal. We can make a choice. We can say we're going to honor it, or we're going to place them in DAAP, or we're going to put them in regular class. Canutillo ISD, through the student code of conduct last year when we approved it, said we're going to honor it. And that's so. Even though we don't have local, this stands as our local right now because it is board approved and it is our student code of conduct. So one of the things that I did is where I was going through all the blues, I was making sure that what we approved last year did align to our policy. And so we have to make sure that they
I personally would like to see it here too, but I would also like to see the local.
We could create a local. Another option that we could do is we could put in language and take on a case-by-case basis. We could change the language and say we would take it on a case-by-case. But then we're
kind of
opening ourselves
up. No, I don't
want to
say on a case by case.
Okay.
What did we just say? So we will leave it alone, but so then the only item then will be on page 7. We will bring back language on telecommunications.
And you'd like to see a local policy. Am I hearing that you'd like to see local policy regarding the
telecommunications? Just send it to us on the Friday
Madam Chair, is what I'm hearing then that they're going to, in the Friday packet, send us the revision so that by the regular meeting we will have already had time to look at it, and will this be on the agenda for our August board meeting?
Yes.
For approval? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Vera. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any more items that we need to review, Ms. Vera?
No.
Any more things during the student code of conduct?
No, that was it.
No? Okay. Okay, so does my committee recommend that for approval for the next board meeting?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
It's just me.
Thank you. Next agenda item, please.
Item 2B is Resource and Compliance Supervisor Job Description, Ms. Vasco.
Madam Chair, committee members, and trustees, Dr. Murphy, I bring forth tonight the job description that I have provided previously in the in your Friday packet. And if you recall, a few meetings ago, we had discussed about the inventory specialist. And in some of the memos that I have sent you, we've since then revised the title. And so now we're calling it Resource and Compliance Supervisor. And we've provided the job description for your review and input. And this basically is going to be revamping a current position that we currently have, the custodial supervisor, and it's going to be revamped to this. So at this point, I wanted to entertain any questions that you may have regarding this job description. Any questions?
I do real quick. Just
sure,
do we have any inventory systems software?
Currently what's being used is School Dude. That's the software that was implemented for work orders, and also it was to be used for the inventory.
But there is a component for inventory controls.
Currently what they're doing is anytime they request a part, every part requested has to be associated with a work order, and your purchase order isn't approved unless it's associated with a work order, whether that's preventative maintenance or a standard work order.
But is there a system, whether it's, there's a two inventory systems, whether FIFO or...
But I know that finance is looking into
some teams.
I know that finance is looking into a new warehouse software.
This is what it was. It was a perpetual inventory system or just a...
The perpetual inventory system that is currently being used is through School Dude. We don't have a...
So we do have a system where there's four, you know, whatever it might be,
yes,
air
and
pumps.
And as you order, through a work order, you decrease the inventory, and as you order new product and have to add it into the inventory, then it's a stroke, yes.
So there is a system, not just, okay.
School.
That's the only question I have.
I have a question regarding to that effect. Ms. Brinkham, have you looked at the GIS? Is this, I know that that also has inventory. I mean, we're happy with the School Dude. I don't have a problem.
To answer your question, no, we haven't looked at it yet. We are having a meeting actually tomorrow night at 4:30, and I'll be looking at it. We have I have a few people coming in, Estelle and I are going to sit down. So we've just loaded everything up, but no, right now I haven't looked at it. And what that I'm going to look at right now, School Dude is was definitely a stopgap measure. We've used it now for a couple of years in IT. Well, since I've been here, almost I think 6 months after I got here, we were using it. Night and day difference. I mean, we can track, you know, pots, and we can track hours it takes. I think that's why I was able to justify the extra personnel that we have, that you guys, that you all approved. So, so I'm going to be looking at that. So I don't even know if I'd give you, be able to give you an educated answer after I look at it tomorrow. But I do think it's something we can look at.
Yes, sir.
Just going towards piggyback some off of your question, I think. Maybe what we need to look at is a policy of whatever the asset, if it's more than $1,000, and it's something that needs to be more track and detail, maybe through the GIS system, so it's something that we might...
Oh, I see. So you could use School Dude for your routine maintenance, your replacement costs, and anything over a capital, or maybe not, maybe
I think it's $5,000 or
$1,000.
That's the asset database. That's the software that was the board approved to fund and allocate funds to purchase. The perpetual inventory and the asset database are two different things. Under the asset database, we capture controlled assets, which is anything from 250 to 4,999, and then the 5,000 and above through the capital system.
And that's what I was saying is maybe we could use a GIS system. So if it's a computer, we could actually say, okay, this computer is at this location. I don't know how exactly detailed the GIS system
is. Well, Ms. Gonzalez is absolutely right. You can use the GIS system. It is an interface. It, buildings loaded into the database. You can then load your wings and your rooms. Then you can even load it down to the number of the room. And I think Ms. Matthews and I did exact opposite. She was going from the ceiling down, I went from the floor up, because we can go in there and then, so then we could create, this is what a standard kinder classroom should look like. This is what a standard third grade classroom should look like, and this is the inventory you should have in it. So this is absolutely an inauguration of the GIS, and it's, the database is absolutely, you're correct, it can go all the way down to the classroom, to the teacher. So it's very powerful.
Okay, going back to the job description. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Ms. Aguirre and Ms. Burns. Any more questions?
I have one, if I might. Under supervises, what exactly is an itinerant custodian? And how can I get?
Basically, the custodians, as we've mentioned before, are now going under the direct supervision of the principals. However, if you recall, the board did approve that we hire 5 itinerant custodians, which are going to be floaters really, whenever there is an absence or additional need for help at a campus, and these individuals will be deployed to that. The custodial supervisor, which now will repurpose for this position, will still be in charge of possibly training and overseeing the equipment. It's the same at the campuses. So there are still going to be some duties that will remain from the old job description. So basically, we'll be supervising these 5 itinerant custodians and deploying them where the need.
Second question I have, you're changing a job description in which we have an employee.
Yes.
And you feel pretty confident that he or she can do the duties as specified in this job description?
Yes.
These are duties that, this is just an enhanced version of the duties that they were supposed to be doing. And so he has a lot of that material, so we're going to work on fine-tuning that, formalizing it, and a lot of it is just getting that information out to the campuses and so that they're more aware of, you know, how things should work. So we're working together.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No.
So do I have your approval to move forward?
Any more questions? No? Okay, it's ready to vote.
Thank you.
Next agenda item, please.
Item 2C is new positions, Ms. Carrasco and Ms. Brigham. There are 2 positions. Number 1 is clerical support for CTE office, and number 2 is assistant principal for CHS.
I have before you the first request that came through our personnel committee, and that is a clerical position. For the CTE office, and basically the committee has approved tentatively this position. Basically, there was a justification given that the program has grown, given that the funding and the amount of dollars that flow through that department, the coordinator was needing some assistance. And so we went ahead and I also provided you the job description. And we're looking at a clerical position as administrative support level 1. So basically, it's like a data entry clerk. She needs assistance for purchase orders, for budget, you know, looking at that information and kind of keeping the office in order and all the records, assisting with record keeping.
Any questions?
Mr. Rodriguez. Just one. Was this in the current fiscal year budget that was approved?
No.
No?
We had thought that there might be some changes that would get some type of relief through existing personnel, but that didn't come to pass.
And of course, this this position will be funded through career technology.
Is there a reason why this didn't come through when we were approving
yes,
the fiscal budget?
Again, Mr. Rodriguez, we had thought that we had personnel within central office that we could use, and that didn't, you know, the board, I think, just recently said there was going to be changes in personnel that we thought we were going to be able to be used, or could be used, going back to the original position.
The board? Can you clarify that? The board what?
Basically, we were just the original plan that we had proposed to you all was to reorganize or restructure some of the positions, and because it did not go as we had anticipated, therefore we're here before you tonight to request for this new position.
Mrs. Stearns.
Did I hear you say that this is not going to come out of local funds? This will come out of the CTE funds,
yes.
So there's no...
It will come out of CTE funds. One of the things that I'm very reticent on leaving school resources at the moment is we've been doing this. School resources has been doing this. Ms. Guilfoyle has been doing it. And bless her heart. And she still smiles. You know, when I looked at just in the past 2 years, last year we had over $512,000 that went through career ed only. This year we have over $753,000 with one person, and then you have to add everything that school resources does with, and then she does transcripts. It's gotten to the point we're at a breaking point. I absolutely came in and I looked and said, we can handle this. Let's, you know, I do career ed, it's my background, I know it, I understand the allocation, but we've done a good job and it has increased. Even in the past year, our funding has increased over about $170,000. When I was a principal, and I know it's different, but when I was a principal, if we generated, you know, $70,000 in POs, that was a lot. And so career ed actually mirrors what I do, and I'm district-wide. So it has increased dramatically. There's 22 teachers.
Thank you, Ms. Brigham.
The administrative support position that we're looking at here would range anywhere between $19,000 to $23,000, and certainly the budget for career technology can support that position.
Thank you very much, Ms. Russell. Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. I have any other questions.
Ms. Gonzalez?
I just kind of want to understand how come it wasn't brought to us before when we were approving the budget as well. If this was something that we needed, why wasn't it mentioned? I mean, I know what you're talking about, the other option that you guys had brought to us in the past, but I mean, I have issues with it coming in now after we've already started the fiscal year, so.
I understand.
I do. I don't.
Ms. Araujo is the coordinator.
Yes, ma'am.
Correct. And Ms. Araujo's stationed here?
Yes, ma'am.
Will she be moved?
No, ma'am. There's no plans of that.
Okay. I guess, Madam Chair.
Mr. Rodriguez.
I mean, my thing is, if we saw last year that budget increase from 500,000 and increase another 20.
No, it was increased by about.
No, it was 500,000 went to 700, so and it increased about 200.
And this year might be a little lower, to be honest, because we went to block schedule.
I don't agree. I guess, do you agree as far as that is? The committee doesn't agree.
Through the chair.
Dr. Murphy.
One other option. We approved a full-time unit for John Warren in evaluation for a executive assistant or an assistant. If it becomes apparent that he only needs a half-time.
Executive assistant?
I apologize, I'm not using the terms correctly. An assistant.
Assistant.
A clerical assistant. If it becomes apparent that Mr. Warren only needs a half-time instead of a full-time, may we split that person with the CTE?
Doc, I mean, it's already become apparent.
Apparent.
Very apparent.
So I guess my question, and just going back, next fiscal year, if it's a personnel issue that you have to deal with, that's your call. But when it comes to budget and the creation of position, that's the school board's call. And if this is going to be created, it should be created at that point, not after the fact. And so, just like the discussion we had the other day, I just continue to, you know, we'll look at this at a different time. But when it comes to the personnel decisions that were made, that should have been brought to us during the budget season, and it wasn't. And now it's become apparent, and we already know. I just don't want to create another position just because we, our administration, through oversight, didn't pick it up during the budget season. So.
Okay.
Tony, next agenda.
Item C2 is the assistant principal for CHS. Yes, this was another new position that was requested through personnel committee on July 18th, and it is an assistant principal for Bentonville High School. And that request, Ms. Brigham is here, and Ms. Lodge is here to present their justification for this request.
Did you have any questions for us, or did you just want me to?
No.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Just, did we look at other campuses compared to ours when it comes
did.
To, and
yes,
do we have that information provided to the board?
I could absolutely, I have it here, I could type it up also for you. What I did do is I went to the El Paso region, and what I did is looked at comparative high schools within our region to see if 4APs. I did find Burgess, I found El Paso High, I found Socorro High School, which has 5. I found East Lake High School. So those are the ones that I was doing some spot checking and were comparable.
What's their comparability when you're looking at campus size?
I actually was looking at about the size, sir, under 2,000, about 1,800 and below.
So 1,800, what's our current class size at the high school and our projected?
Well, we're at 1680 right now. I think we'll probably, no, 1589. And I do project we'll probably start the first day of school probably at 1675. And we could go up to about 1700, but it could also go down a little bit.
Okay, so comparative to, let's say, 16
high,
to 17.
Castle High was about 14. Burgess was sitting about 15, I think, somewhere around there. But these were the ones that I just did. I Googled, I went in, I went right into the website, and I went into the
administration. And what's the amount of the amount of students they actually had, or just in El Paso, let's say.
El Paso High, I think, was about 40, something like that.
And what's the amount of administrators?
There was, at El Paso High, it was four APs, and there four assistant principals with a name assistant principal and one principal.
And did they have an instructional coordinator?
They had coaches. They had about three instructional coaches.
So, and what about El Paso?
That was El Paso, sir.
And, I mean, Burgess?
Burgess had similar. It was four APs that had the title of AP. And then they had very similar to what we have, only they had more personnel in the instructional.
I guess one of the things, looking at it, you know, because we are a growing high school, mm-hmm. and these are schools that were at one point at a certain capacity and are now decreasing in numbers because of the, so it's something, I don't know, there's...
I think we're not, I see where you're going is I think we're in a different phase. We're actually, excuse me, look like we'll be growing, where maybe El Paso High and Burgess may not, because they're a little bit more landlocked than what we're at.
Well, and then you have the age groups within the neighborhoods actually
absolutely
changing.
Absolutely,
sir. So it's, I guess, did we look at other districts? Let's say Fabens, Clint?
I stayed in the, well, see, you get to Clinton, their high school's a bit bigger. So I tried to just stay with comparable.
But how many did they have?
Well, let's see, one of them I looked up, I said, that can't be all. What was it? The other one at Socorro had six APs, and they had 2,100 kids. And I'm like, whoa, six APs, but that was their title, you know, because I didn't go into... I went in totally to administrative staff. Then I said, I want to see what kind of instructional support they had. And the instructional support, then they had, they call them anywhere from instructional board aides, instructional coaches, you know, and so, but they had most of them, like El Paso High, and some of that, they have some in the core subjects. They might have one for, not everyone had the English, but it might be English and social studies, or math and science. So sometimes they had two instructional coaches, but that was over and above the four APs.
I have a couple more questions, but I'll defer them for later.
I would just like to clarify, instructional coordinators are not considered administrators. So
you're not supposed to be
not in, our district.
Well, not in any of the other districts. Like I said, they're instructional coaches, so they are not considered administrators.
Do you have any kind of data for us as far as what the trend has been at the high school when we increased from two APs to three, and what the enrollment has been? I mean, steady. Any
we
kind
also
of data
had matches, so that's
yeah, that's separated. So I know, but
the question you're asking: do we have any information, like when do we add two APs and at what number? Is there a threshold?
Mm-hmm.
I know what we did at elementaries and middle schools. We used it was a 600 mark. I don't know where I saw that. It was because I know some districts. I was when I looked at in some West Texas schools or something, you had an elementary school, the middle school had 450. They only had one person. And then there was some that I noticed in our region that had as little as 350 and had a principal and an AP. That's a great job. So, and one of the things, I remember, you know what you're talking about, Ms. Cassidy, is absolutely what we used for counseling. You know, there was like that 500-1 ratio for mm-hmm. counseling, and then we went to the 450-1 for counselors. I would have to look and see what that is. I don't believe we have anything in policy that has that, but I could see if TASB has something that has that. But what I do see is growth. I don't see we're going to get smaller. And I'm a little concerned with the AYP. And I'm very concerned, anybody will say that, with the end of course, the accountability, the increased rigor, the 16 tests, that we make sure that the people that we have there do what they're supposed to be doing and the roles they're supposed to be having, their Title I role, being paid the Title I funds, that we need to use them as that and such. And I do think Ms. Salvaggio had said that she would like to set up the discipline and have somebody else as a, would you say an arbitrator?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Because right now the senior, the high school, the principal is being the high school disciplinarian for, you know, because there's a grade level. Because there's four, and he had a whole grade level.
Yeah.
So what that does as a principal, as a principal, it takes the ability to arbitrate who's on your campus. That you could be the sage that could come in and say, okay, I can, to the parent, I can see where you're going with this. Let me, it's very good. That's what my assistant principal always would handle discipline, because sometimes they got too close to it and or got too personal with it. That I could stand in and say, okay, let's look at this. And then also we're looking at the instruction piece, which is the counselors,
sure,
and all that.
Dr. Murphy.
Yes. Can you address the funding of this, Ms. Carlson?
Sure.
Or
go ahead.
Yes, we do have a position that in the music that we are not replacing. And so there could be a savings there is a savings there in salary of $59,412 for this year. So the thought was that we use that funding for this AP position, and of course that would fund most of that position, and so the difference would just be minimal.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Why are we not using that position for what it was intended?
Why are we not using the music position?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I do is I look at the ratios, what student to teacher ratio, and I look at how well personnel is being used. I did talk to Mr. Ramos, okay? Mr. Ramos is a director of the Coordinated School of Music. I'm not sure exactly what his title is, but he absolutely goes out and goes to the other campuses and builds the program. Are we there to have three people? No.
Three people.
Also, I met with Ms. Salvaggio and I met with Ms. Massey, and we looked at the master schedule, and I was a little bit surprised to find that our choir person was 5 out of 10. That means he taught 5 periods out of 10. And I do not think that is a good allocation of resources. So with Ms. Salvaggio's permission and with the master schedule, we added 2 more periods to that person. And the class sizes, when you have choir, you can have a class size of 38. And for band, you can have a class size of 70.
And Chair,
nothing of those have been exceeded.
If y'all will remember, we moved a music teacher from CMS to CHS due to multiple reasons. That person has since resigned and has left El Paso. And the position, in looking at the master schedule, is not necessary. So we can, to use our term, kill the position, and that frees up that $59,000. To have the position, which if the board desires, we could go ahead and fill it, we're gonna have small classes and not have a utilization of that unit in any way that would be a robust use of that unit. And Ms. Salvaggio, the entire team, even Mr. Ramos agrees that the unit can be killed this year.
I do want to stress that, because I did tell Ms. Ramos, and he goes, I know he's bringing it's numbers. He said, that's right. When I see the numbers, I become the advocate. You know, I mean, that's what we do, is we guide the district.
Mr. Rodriguez, going back to your point on the previous, as superintendent, I was not going to allow this unit to come forward because it wasn't planned. Of course, Ms. Salvaggio wasn't here.
True.
But we do have this money that is available to do this.
Yeah, but just because we have money doesn't necessarily mean we have to.
And then the request, which came not only from Ms. Silvaggio, but from her entire team.
Yeah, but I mean, if we go back to the previous item, if you mind, we go back to the previous item and the previous discussion that we had. I mean, for us to just be moving sort of like this, the reorganization of clerical, it's the same thing, you know. We move around just to, I guess, satisfy instead of satisfying the students' needs and not satisfying the personnel needs. And so that's an issue that needs to be looked at.
Absolutely, but I would say the difference is that the CTE program has had the same coordinator and she did not bring it forward as she should have. We did not have a high school principal in place or else this would have come forward.
But now we're bringing it forward after the budget season, and so that's where, you know.
And we do have the FTE to do it.
But it's not going to cover all of it. Where are you going to get the rest of the money from?
One of the things we still do, if I may, we have the 12 or 14 FTEs that we haven't put into yet. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. We're looking at numbers. I just ran some today. I'm looking at a couple elementary schools and I got my eye on. And what we haven't heard right yet is the bamming of the door. Like this time last year, we had principals saying, we need this position right now, we need it right now. And I think because if you recall, last year we put a lot of FTEs on, especially Jose Damian and Garcia. So right now we're not seeing that yet. So we do have those 12 FTEs, which the board did give us. So I think with the one FTE and then those other 12, I do think we have the funding.
Ms. Saros.
I know that the board has talked about in the very recent past security at the high school, discipline at the high school, issues at the high school, and that we have discussed having an SRO officer. Mm-hmm. Would this for this year then, is what you're saying to us, would take the place of an SRO? Would this be that would fill that need?
It's two different.
I don't think that it would.
You don't think
No. When you're talking about an assistant principal and you're talking about law enforcement, I don't think so. I don't think that it's going to fill that need. But even based on the surveys that we looked at, I mean, I think students that are on the campus, they're going to feel more protected if you have an actual SRO officer there than if you just have an assistant principal. That's just my standpoint on it. But I mean, here we are again discussing this, and as Mr. Rodriguez said, you know, it's after the budget, and while we were in the process of hiring a new principal, the current principal did finish out the year, and this was never something that was brought to us, never discussed. So to me, once again, it is after the fact, and I would like to wait and for the year to start, let the kids come on board and give Ms. Silvaggio at least a year to see what the needs are going to be, and then we can address them next year. But I don't think right now you need to do that. It might. We don't know.
And I was going to add to that too. We recently gave the band department, the fine arts department, $19,000.
Oh yes, for the music, for the sound system.
Well, but I want
an additional.
We added an additional $19,000.
Oh, yes,
Can I just ask, I guess the concern I have here is we're, 1 month before school starts, there might be some other needs or it might be some other rearrangement that might possibly come up next fiscal year.
If what you're saying though with the FTEs, I mean, unless it's just growth, that's the only thing we can come for. I mean, if any other need comes, I mean, unless it's a teacher, like another English teacher, But if it's something that we see, it's not going to be accepted because it wasn't, we didn't
what would be up to the committee?
Necessarily had the information.
I mean, this is an administrative position, and we should have forecast it during the budget season, not after the budget season. I see that we have somebody new on board, but there might be some needed changes. There might be a different, either, I don't know what it might be, but, you know, till we actually have her on board and working, there might be some other changes that next fiscal year budget, bring them to us, but not, you know, in the after we've already approved the budget, you know? Mm-hmm. That's just my concern. There's a system in place, and that's what should be done.
May I say something?
Or,
you know, I think that what concerns the whole team, please understand, I'm not just bringing this up, you know, forward by myself. As soon as I got there, the APs came forward and came to me and said that one of the difficulties, as Ms. Brigham said, was that there isn't an arbitrator on campus because all four administrators are doing discipline. So parents don't always feel comfortable, and so they take it to central office right away, which is fine, but I think I and the team would like to create an atmosphere where they feel very comfortable coming in and knowing that they can be heard by.
And I understand, I guess, from my understanding, I mean, one of the individuals, Mr. Hurd, was there for years, and he's the one that dealt with those issues. And so I guess when that individual retired, then, you know, the work was, you know, dispersed amongst the APs. So I guess, I mean, to get more time on the ground and then analyze to make a correct assessment of what actually needs to be done, maybe some roles within your APs might need to change or something. I'm not saying what to do, but that might be the issue. But for us just to come in after the budget season and come in and approve a new AP is not the correct, to me, is not the correct way of doing it. We have a system in place, and that time is when the budget season comes around, and those issues should be handled there. And so there might be some changes, who knows, but if we're acting quick on something like this, which is something that is important in the long term, I don't think it's right. So that's just my position.
Would Ms. Brigham brought up the point, we have been approved by the board 12 FTEs. If in the end, say like in October, after the enrollment's all settled, we have FTEs left, would it be amenable to the board to bring back at that time? If at that time, after she's been here several months, it still is a desire, if we still have that FTE?
But then you have to look at it again in January when enrollment.
Okay.
You have to look at it again.
The other concern I have, Madam Chair, if I might, is, I mean, we keep on, you know, the additions that we're making and we're continuing to make is whether it's administrative, whether it's central office, and we're not looking at, you know, the main thing, which the FTEs should be for growth, which is teachers. And so I don't want to touch that till we actually see where we're at in the middle of the year, first of all, and if that's the case, then that's a personnel issue that would have to be decided, and you could bring that to the board at that time.
Yes.
But then the board has the, you know, the authority to either create that position or not. But I think what we need to look at is make sure that we correctly save those FTEs, because if you recall, 2 years ago when we were looking at our budget, we had half the, I don't know if it was 2 years ago or a year ago, we had the half amount of FTEs that were budgeted, and if we wouldn't have budgeted or doubled that, then we would have been in some serious issues and coming to the board and saying, you know what, we need more money for FTEs. So I think it's critical that we look at that money and save it for what it's intended to, and then at that point make those decisions at that point. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Madam Chair, I've got a comment. Dr. Murphy, what I'm hearing from all of this is that there's possibly needs, but we also have a really good process, our budget process, and if these aren't being filled at this point, they need to, you know, next year will be here before you can blink an eye.
Yes, ma'am.
Begin to put those into the budget process for next year.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez.
The committee doesn't agree. Next agenda item.
Item 3 is community input.
Thank you. Comments. Ms. Lilly.
Good evening. I kind of walked in at the latter part of your discussion here, but as a parent and community member, I sat here when Dr. Murphy went over the survey, the student survey. And I recall that on that survey, an issue that was of concern was that some of the students didn't feel safe. And I understand you're hesitant about the assistant principal position. And I do agree that assistant principals have a job, and disciplinary is part of it, but it should not take 100% of their time dealing with the whatever discipline problems are at the high school. I also sat in this boardroom when somebody suggested about SRO officers to bring it back. As a parent, and a community member, I would support the SRO officer. I do agree with Ms. Casares that I know that there are discipline problems at the high school. I had a daughter there, and between fights and other stuff going on, just the presence of a law officer, a sheriff, deputy, might kind of bring down that violence, to say, or whatever, that takes place just because they see somebody there that could possibly give them a citation. If there's some illegal stuff going on, the assistant principal can't do that, but a law officer could. So that would be something to consider. My point is just don't forget about the safety. I realize that the assistant, what you're talking about, this is after the budget, but you had discussed about safety and SRO officers, and I really do hope that that comes true, because I think that we need to go back to the way it used to be and have, at the high school, at least SRO officers. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more comments? Input from community?
I have another comment.
Ms. Lawrence.
Maybe Dr. Murphy could bring us back some SRO possibilities at our next month's committee meeting.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The meeting is adjourned and the time is 6:40. Thank you.
You need your gavel. You want to press the gavel?